Let's start this. Straight to the dome, Vegan Hacks Pod.
We make noises and it creates meaning in your brain. Isn't humanity fascinating?
It's a human experience, so we're dealing with human beings too. So,
and plants, and not animals.
And animals as well that are, you know, sentient. Actually, you know, there was something I wanted to talk about, and it was like breaking news, actually. I probably can't find it because there's so much news.
So much noise.
There was so much news and noise.
So much chatter. How do you keep, you know, like, I know smartphones are great, but my attention span is shot. And there's just a flood of information, and I just feel like I have less agency in the world because so much is getting flung at me, and I'm just sort of responding to it.
Yeah, I know it's overwhelming what we do, what we experience. I mean, I think that the thing that I do, I mean, not that I'm like some fixture of perfection. But
far from it.
I try to stay away from the phone sometimes. I take breaks. I keep the phone away from me. I have activities that I do that don't involve the phone. Like I play with my kendama. I do some things that are analog. And I think that that's important, to take breaks from your electronics as much as you can. We say, as electronics are beamed into your brain. Actually, okay, so this is actually from NBC News. Scientists push new paradigm of animal consciousness, saying even insects may be sentient.
Oh, wow.
Far more animals than previously thought likely have consciousness, top scientists say in a new declaration, including fish, lobsters, and octopus.
Well, octopus, obviously, they're so smart. Yeah.
Bees play with wooden balls, apparently for fun. The cleaner varroa fish appears to recognize its own visage in an underwater mirror. Octopi, isn't it octopuses?
Both, I think, are correct. Octopuses and octopi.
I know, octopuses kind of sounds funky, but I'll say octopuses because that's what they wrote here on the NBC News article.
Who are you to edit them?
Octopuses seem to react to anesthetic drugs and will avoid settings where they are likely experienced past pain. Wow.
Oh, wow. They have flashbacks. I mean, octopuses are so smart. I once saw one trapped in a jar and it figured out how to unscrew it from within. Oh, but you know, speaking of animals recognizing their own visage, I recently saw a video of a spider and somebody showed the spider a mirror and it started raising its front legs in a like wavy pattern, like basically waving at itself with two legs stuck up in the air in like a, like as if it was dancing. It was really cute.
Yeah, I know people don't want to see animals do things for fun, you know, like it means they have like a free will and they want to do their own thing.
I have often thought of a spider and wondered if it had free will. Have we talked about this? Where it's, you know, I wonder if, you know, if you chase a spider and it hides in the corner, is it doing that because it chooses to do that? Or are those all conditioned responses to external stimuli? Like, is it making the strategy of hiding in a corner, knowing it's harder to hit with a newspaper? Or not that I would, but or is that like a evolutionary response to, you know, you do this, it does that, like a, you know, computer program?
I mean, the old school way of thinking is it's just instinct.
Yeah, I mean, spiders just, they move like robots. I think of, they look like little biological robots, and then they make these intricate webs. Like that can't be the result of some like conscious vision. They just do what their instinct says, and it turns out in this like mathematical pattern, geometric pattern. So cool.
Well, you're trying to argue with me in this finding.
No, I'm not arguing. I'm
how dare you, Mike Keller?
You and your yelling, it's just, oh, I gotta keep turning the volume lower and lower today.
All three of these discoveries came in the last 5 years, indication that the more scientists test animals, hopefully test them nicely, the more they find that many species have inner lives and be sentient.
Cool. Sentience.
A surprising range of creatures have shown evidence of conspicuous thought or experience, including insects, fish, and some crustaceans. That has prompted a group of top researchers on animal cognition to publish a new pronouncement, and they hope will transform how scientists and society view and care for animals. Nearly 40 researchers signed the New York Declaration on Animal Consciousness, which was first presented at a conference in New York City on Friday morning. This marks a pivotal moment as a flood of research on animal cognition collides with debates on how various species ought to be treated. Anyway, it goes on. Just, you can read more about it.
I wonder if anybody of the, you know, 8 billion people on this planet, if any one of them read that article and thought, upon further reflection, I got to stop eating these things.
They're probably eating their steak while they're reading it.
Oh, no, I'm sure some people are. Yeah, I mean, the majority probably, you know, there's that disconnect, that cognitive dissonance. But I wonder if that article was enough to turn one person. It'd be interesting. You know, it's kind of funny. I was recently catching up with a friend of mine whom I, you know, haven't spoken to for a few months, who lives in another state. And she apparently had a brain damage from a horse riding accident, which she no longer rides horses. But and since her head injury, she no longer eats meat or fish, eat or meat or dairy or whatever. I don't know. She basically went vegetarian since then because somehow it like caused her to reflect on living things. And it, she says now she feels more in line with her humanity. But it's like, you know, you see in cartoons when someone bonks their head, it like it makes this like dramatic change and then they bonk it again and they go back to normal. But it's like, have you ever heard of somebody hitting their head and then choosing to go vegetarian from that?
Okay, I'm going to put a disclaimer out here.
Don't hit your head. Don't hit people in the head.
Don't hit people in the head. It's yes. Probably not going to make them go vegan. If it did, then do not. It, but it's probably not going to make them go vegan.
No.
I mean, it's interesting. Maybe you get a sense of your own mortality.
Perhaps. Right, yeah. Maybe
it's not the head injury per se, but mm-hmm. but maybe the experience and showing that you have limitations and maybe that type of connection might have something to do with this change. I mean, again, I have no idea, but it'd be interesting to talk to her and see what, you know,
also she has to just, say about it. You know, a super busy person who's like working 24/7. So maybe just the time of being like laid out in bed for a while gave her more space to reflect on things. Maybe a little of both.
I mean, I think that a lot of things changed. Like, I mean, I thought the pandemic put a lot of change in people's lives. And,
yeah.
And actually a lot of people
for
started,
a while.
I know, but a lot of people started eating plant-based and mm-hmm. there was also, you know, a lot of these businesses started selling more of their vegan meat and people reevaluating how they do their lives, you know, how they, and I mean, I feel like the trauma is still there. In many different aspects. I mean,
I hate to admit how I kind of had a good time through most of the pandemic, just because it was like there was so much less FOMO and there was so like kind of, you know, you have your quarantine friends. And so there's less of like information overload, less like I have to go out and do all these things. It's like there were limitations. And from those limitations came like a sense of peace.
There was situations. I think it's different when you have a kid and mm-hmm. they're growing up and they're, my daughter was going through middle school.
Sure. Yeah.
And
that sucks.
There was issues with socialization and all sorts of other things, you know, going to school on a computer screen. So, I mean, I definitely think that like the younger set were affected a lot more.
Totally. Yeah, they were kind of robbed, you know, like I feel bad if someone like I never really got to experience fifth grade, for example, if someone like felt that way, you know what I mean? Or fifth and sixth grade, it just sucks because those are such formative years. And so much of what you learn in those years isn't just knowledge, like textbook knowledge. It's really socialization.
Exactly, young man. Do you want to talk about the depressing news?
I guess. I mean, every day there's got to be some. What is it?
There's this magazine. It's called Alt Meat. And they're also referring to another website called Pitch Deck, which is like a venture capital website. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is from Alt Meat. Editor's Choice. Startups Mass Extinction Event by Lisa M. Keefe.
Wow.
The fact that money is bloody hard to secure for the nascent alt meat companies is not news. But is it a mass extinction event for startups? That's the message from PitchBook in a recent newsletter. The startup mass extinction event that doomsayers have predicted for 2 years is likely to ramp up in 2024. New founders facing a brutal funding environment may instead opt to bootstrap their growth, the venture capital tracking consultancy wrote.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
PitchBook is tracking startups of all kinds, so it's not just a warning about money for proteins. Still, considering that alt meat companies are vying with all kinds of new technologies for the means to exist and maybe grow, the data is daunting. More than 55,000 VC-backed companies in the U.S. currently. More than 2,000 venture capital firms ceased new investment in the first 9 months of 2023. And 3,200 startups failed in 2023.
This is startups in general or vegan startups?
This is startups in general, but I mean, right. It does cover.
Yeah. Well, I mean, startups fail. That's like half the nature. You know, take a risk and swing for the fences. That's what a startup is.
Two trends that PitchBook notes are that whereas the lack of funding started pinching in the late stage and venture growth companies early on, it is now squeezing pre-seed and seed stage companies as well, and that companies are agreeing or being pressured to agree to acquisition offers early in the firm's development. That means larger companies are just swallowing them up or taking their ideas. PitchBook contends that more startup companies will be self-funded. How many credit cards does it take to buy industrial scale fermenters or high volume food grade extruders? So I don't know. I mean, but again, all these companies, these lab grown meat companies, these alt meat companies, the synthetic companies like, you know, Beyond Meat, Impossible Meat, their investments drying up and they're looking to make profit.
To a great extent, it's maybe, I mean, I don't know if this is, that article speaks just that's to the market in general, but part of this is interest rates. You know, when the pandemic had 0% interest rates, people were chasing yield or chasing opportunity. They had a more appetite for risk. When interest rates are now pretty high, it's both an alternative for an investor. They, you know, instead of taking a risk, they can just park it in bonds and make a return and sleep better at night. And then beyond that, there was this whole like vegan bubble thing where everybody was investing and the market wasn't, I hate this, but the consumers, there weren't enough of us to like prop up all, you know, to support all these vegan businesses.
Yeah.
Those cool people at Upton's, isn't that more or less like a bootstrapped business?
Yeah. But again, they did a slow growth.
They grew very slowly and organically. You know, I mean, in general, I think that's healthy to grow slowly and organically. The one thing that sucks about this bootstrapping thing is that it shuts out people who don't have means, people who are, you know, have less money and or, you know, they can't afford to quit their job. It becomes sort of elitist. But at the same time, fire hosing money at a bunch of companies that may or may not have great ideas sort of clutters the marketplace, and it makes it harder for good ideas to shine because like they're just awash in a sea of products that may or may not have market appeal. And this way, a company with products that are appealing to people that, you know, you could start out of the back of a, you know, food truck or whatever, you can really establish the market for it and prove the viability of the product before dousing it in cash and like creating all this waste.
Well, also too, the animal agriculture companies have created so much propaganda.
That's also true. And some people are swallowing it. I was just saying, you know, if you already have a bias and you're like, I really enjoy the dopamine effect of eating a dead animal, you're really inclined to listen to whatever quote unquote data supports your already like entrenched feelings. Just like we're also more inclined to support data that happens to like coincide with our feelings, you know?
Yeah, but there was an article that just came out, and it was about how vegan food just as unhealthy as meat. And there was like this big article, and they made like newscasts about it and stuff like that. Well,
healthy is such a multivariable thing with so many metrics. So if you just base this on like fat content or calories, like maybe you could put them side by side. But if you know cholesterol, there's no cholesterol in like vegan food. So well, you know,
yeah. But their argument was that it was like, oh, look at all the salt and fat in an Impossible Burger, and it's like, okay, well. An Impossible Burger isn't vegan food. It's something that happens to be vegan, and it's an indulgence, but it's not vegan food. You can like cherry pick.
I think it is vegan food. I mean, what are you talking?
Well, I'm saying it's not. Well, it's not
the only vegan food. It's not your. Yeah, sure. It's not your only option. Of course,
it's not something that people eat every single day. Oh, it's breakfast. I'll have my Impossible Burger. And then, oh, it's lunch. I'll have my Impossible Burger. And then I'll have
some dinner. People eat it every day. What do you mean?
Maybe they do. They probably shouldn't.
Perhaps not. But
I mean,
it's supposed to be a meat equivalent. Like you substitute it for whatever you would have otherwise eaten meat in life.
There's some guy on YouTube, and I guess he eats macaroni and cheese every day. You know, I mean, I understand there's people that eat sure. things that, there's a guy wow. that I guess he goes to McDonald's every day. I'm just saying.
Oh yeah, there's that cheeseburger guy who's like literally every day he just holds up his fingers and that's how many cheeseburgers he wants for that day. And literally he every single day they know him. He doesn't have to talk to them. He literally holds up his fingers and then hands over his credit card. No words exchanged.
Yeah, but the argument that vegan food is salty and high in fat, and then picking something that's salty and high in fat is disingenuous,
right?
Okay, but we're also what's also interesting is this whole concept of vegan capitalism. Miyoko Shimmer, you know, famed from making Miyoko's Creamery, just recently posted this on Instagram about vegan capitalism.
I'm done with vegan capitalism, the misguided notion that we can invent our way through technology to alleviate animal suffering and save the planet. First of all, it doesn't work. Repeat purchases among non-vegans is very, very low. And meat consumption is still on the rise, despite the plethora of products on shelves. Now, as a vegan, I'm glad that we've got more awareness because of the products, and I enjoy them myself sometime. I'm also not against business. I'm not against your right to sell a product or a service, especially if you're a vegan, and I encourage more vegan businesses. But let's not forget that we still have the hard work to do, and that vegan capitalism, the pursuit of endless growth of capital, not of value, is taking money and resources away from the hard work and consolidating powers into the hands of those that have. So we have to rethink how we approach capitalism. And I think there is a way to do that.
Okay.
I honestly don't fully understand her point. I think something got muddled there. And then also, as I'm listening, I'm thinking to myself about her journey in vegan capitalism. And I get eventually she was ousted, but so she's talking about this, capitalist tendency to want to return value to their shareholders. And as a result, yeah, I guess that's kind of what happened to her insofar as she was running a business for whatever her own reasons. And then it got acquired. And then they're like, okay, we need to like cut these corners and we need to streamline this and that. And that's how we improve our balance sheet. Is that what she's railing against?
I think it's an interesting concept she's bringing up, but it's kind of ripe because, I mean, she made choices. She made choices to make this company bigger and bigger. Maybe she learned from her situation. Also,
yeah, I am done, meaning she was into this idea before, and now with some reflection, she's over it. Look, one thing I think she's trying to say, and I kind of agree with her, is that you can't innovate your way to like making everybody more ethical, right? Because there's there has to be an underlying belief in the consumer. Non-vegans don't make repeat purchases. And it's partially, I think, because of pricing or because it doesn't taste exactly what they're used to, whatever, or distribution. I don't know what. But sure, what if she's saying you cannot use your cleverness to create products that are like indistinguishable, that you can like capture non-vegans, like yes, cleverness alone isn't going to do it. If there isn't like an underlying ethical reason for it, the verisimilitude of your product by itself is not enough to change people's worldview. There has to be like their worldview first has to change, and then like us, we're like more forgiving about the verisimilitude of the products.
Also, too, I think she touched on growth at any cost. Like there has mm-hmm. to be growth no matter what. Right. And that perception that a company is failing if it's not constantly right. growing that, and building its
that's
whatever,
what
its
happens
tower.
When you take investors' money.
That's right.
If it's your own money and you're making enough money to live from the business, you could stay the same for 100 years and it won't matter because your needs are met. As soon as you take someone else's money, they're giving it to you on the expectation of growing it. Otherwise, like, why would they give it to you in the first place?
Well, it's just like the situation with the vegan pizza parlor. They're making their pizza and they're a vegan company and they're using the vegan cheese and things aren't really, they're not making the money that they're supposed to be making. Like, well, let's add dairy cheese to it. Well, obviously if they're ethical vegans, they're not going to do that. But if mm-hmm. they're thinking about the bottom line, they're thinking about growth. Well, we need to grow our customers. Well, we'll put dairy cheese on it. So they're not thinking in an ethical way. They're just thinking of, well, bottom line, what are we going to do?
They're just thinking of survival and they just couldn't, like, they won't be able to make their expenses.
Or like, for example, like Impossible Meat. Okay. So Impossible Meat is run by a person who says he's not vegan, you know, says he, you know, he mixes in the meat, whatever. If it became real trendy, like right now it's trendy for all these fashion models to ingest collagen in their smoothies or whatever. But if it became a point where it's like, oh, it's really hot to add 20% animal fat into our hamburgers or what, you know, if that became a fashion thing, then and it was something that they could make money on, they would definitely consider that. Don't you think?
Yeah,
they're not an ethical company.
Oh, you're saying yeah, because they're publicly traded. They're like their board is not all vegans. Yes, unless they made the calculus that like that would alienate their whole core, which it would. You know, it would
obviously
alienate
yeah,
their
yeah.
whole core business. But yeah,
I mean, obviously this is just a
that would yeah know. Sure. If that theoretical situation would be a business decision, not an ethical decision. Yeah, I mean sure. If you have a publicly traded company, without some like really draconian corporate bylaws, you could be kicked off of it if, you know, if you're not doing what would optimize value. You know, there are activist investors whose whole business model is buying up a controlling interest of stock in a company and firing all the people at the top because they think they have the potential to make more money doing something differently.
Well, and also we have, like, I guess an investment group. They call them the Vegan Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're involved in, you know, plant-based shenanigans.
Is that like fighting fire with fire? If they're all ethical vegans, then they're able to use the same, like, corporate tactics to protect the veganism of a company in the same way that someone else could dilute it.
The problem is it's not a vegan world. It's an omnivore world. And a lot of times as vegans, sometimes we feel like we're swimming upstream.
Yep.
And
feels
the,
like that
the
a
current
lot.
Is pushing against us. What you gonna do? Well, Mike Heller, what you gonna do?
I'm going to eat an Impossible Burger despite its poor health profile.
And you're relatively
try my
healthy.
Best.
You're relatively healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still alive. I think I'm in